If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hello, welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison.
And this is a podcast where we ruin a horror movie just for you.
Just for all of you. It's not... Happy New Year?
Yes.
We're recording this in December, but...
Right. I think it's January 2nd, where you are in the future, listener.
In the future?
Yeah, let's see. Yes. It says we're dark. Well, you know what? It's either the 2nd or the 9th, and either
it's
way...
It's January.
It's January, and we hope you're doing well. We hope you had a great holiday, whatever those holidays were. And we're back at it. By that, I mean eating fiber. I'm about to join a new gym, actually, because there's one right near my
exciting.
Work. I have to, now that I am.
What gym?
It's called True Vision.
Okay.
And it is 140.
Feels like a cult.
That's the thing. So it's $149, okay. Which is a lot, but you get unlimited classes.
Okay. See, that's like very appealing.
Exactly. Because I'm like, I do need a class. But my friend went there and said she did hot Pilates. I was like, uh-oh, what was it? She's like, well, it's very culty. And I said, that seems okay. I'm not going to join. And if I do, I'll think of how fit I'll get in a cult.
I am on board for culty fitness stuff. Yeah. It is like I was a longtime Bikram yoga doer. And I was like, yep, 6 days a week, I was doing hot yoga. It was the best I've ever looked in my whole life. I mean, also, I was a younger person with a younger person's body. But I was like, oh, I mean, because like fitness is often about routine and it's about outside in, like, you know, I'm struggling with it right now because it's too cold to go swim in New York. Just it's too cold to like walk home with wet hair and I want to do my hair stuff at home. I want kind of a culty fitness situation. So
yeah, I feel like for me, it's right near my work and it's right near my bus stop. So I feel like it's
very convenient.
They let you go for free to try it out. So I'm going to try it out.
All right, give it a.
So that's what I'll be doing in January, ostensibly, barring some sort of other issue. Allison, how you doing? What's up with you?
I'm fine. My skin is dry, but other than that, that's like not new. Can I plug something?
Yes, of course. What are you talking about? Yes. Please, I beg of you.
At the end of January, if you're in New York, I will be doing 3 nights. I am reworking Oh God, a Show About Abortion to be more kind of what I want it to be in this current moment, and I'm taking it apart, and there are lots of pieces of the old show, but there's also a ton of new stuff and new jokes that I'm working on, and I'm doing 3 nights at Union Hall January 30th, 31st, and February 1st in Brooklyn. If you have not seen the show originally, it's a fun like workout show where I'll be doing like a lot of stuff from the old show, but also kind of reframing it and thinking about some new things. And if you have seen the old show and miss it, you can come see this new version. But
that sounds great.
I'm recognizing that now it's early January technically for listeners, and in the end of January I'll be doing these shows, and I'm trying to remember to tell people when they are.
And thank you for doing that. That's very smart.
Try my best.
So go see
other
her.
Than that.
Please.
Yeah. Please come see it. And other than that, I will say another plug. The Laneige sleep hydrating mask.
I have seen those.
It's like a big blue jar, and it's like a gel cream.
Ooh, okay.
So it's like, you know, those, like, it's not greasy. It's like a water-based, like a water cream.
Okay. I think I know what that is.
It goes on really, if you like opened it up, you'd be like, I've seen this viscosity before. But it's basically just like a very cooling lotion that you put, but like you just like slather it on at night. And I will say it is like, I do wake up. It's like, that's the least dry I am all day.
That sounds great.
So I don't know. Go get it.
I wish I had something to recommend. I recommend calling your dear friends and wishing them a happy New Year's.
That's nice.
I'm trying to think. I just got some work gossip. I'm thankful for work gossip. I cannot share it, but gossip. Nothing hits like it.
Oof. Nothing hits. I love work gossip.
Like a little work gossip.
Yeah, maybe we'll recommend stuff all month. Who knows?
I'll try to come up with something to recommend. Yeah.
Well,
I keep getting ads for, I hate to even bring this up, but I'm being inundated. I'm on a lot of PR mailing lists for, because I worked at Vulture when Trump was elected. Yeah. So then like I just wrote up everyone who performed at his inauguration. And it was just like a running list of the fucking nobodies and fucking nothing that wanted to perform at his inauguration. And but then as a result, I'm on every possible worst PR list. And we received also this email too, the ruined email about the Daily Wire Plus comedy Katie Ballers, which is just a fucking dud of a movie. Yeah. It is obviously transphobic. And then in addition to that, they're inflating their Rotten Tomatoes score. So it has a 94 on Rotten Tomatoes. It looks like dog shit, shit. And I have received it on every email I like. Basically, it's like something somebody has like scanned all of my emails and I'm just receiving it. And I just want them to know that the more I receive this, the more money I will give to trans organizations.
Great. Oh, wonderful.
Against, I was like, I love that. I just want to confirm. And I know they always talk about Trantifa. If they're looking for any cis people in Trantifa, I'm ready to sign up.
Yep. Because I'm in.
Every fucking email I get, I was like, you all should KMS. Wait. KYS. If you will. It is the worst of American culture altogether.
No question.
And then to be like, and now we will launch a streaming platform.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrific. Not. I'm going to go ahead and wish for their demise. Die.
Hey, everybody, it's Hallie.
And Allison.
And we're here to tell you about another exciting installment of Ruined. It is, of course, our January live show. And we are doing a very special film that you perhaps can advertise to everyone on the planet. It is the movie Night Swim.
I'm so excited. You know me. I love a pool. So this has been, as soon as I saw the trailer, I was like, we got to do this. And we are on Sunday, January 28th, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We're going to be doing it live.
We'll do it live.
You can get your tickets and view it at moment.co/ruined. And of course, $20 Patreon tier members. You will get your tickets to the live show in your email, probably the day of. $10 as always. And it's, we'll do the games. We'll do, the chat will be up and running. We'll have merch, maybe new merch. No promises.
We simply can't. We can only promise you a gorgeous January night swim.
Yes.
So join us then.
And if you can't make it Sunday night, it'll be up for 72 hours at that link. Again, that's moment.co/ruined. See you there.
Speaking of someone's demise, we are, of course, kicking off a new month. And this new is month. A oft discussed and now and frequently asked for. We are doing a month of sequels.
Yes.
And we're going to try to do some big ones, some big guys, some heavy hitters.
We're doing all sequels for originals we've already covered.
Yes. So,
you can go back and kind of explore the originals that we've done so that you can like, or go like re-listen before you listen to the next one and see if we've remembered anything or talked, like, you know, that's a fun experiment.
Yeah. And I feel like the way to do this is go listen to the first movie now before you listen to this. And the first movie is, of course, a classic, John Carpenter's Halloween. That's right. We are doing Halloween 2. We always like to have Allison watch the trailer. Allison, what do you think about the trailer for Halloween 2?
It made me realize that every time we talk, like, I mix up Michael Myers, Jason, and Freddy, which I think is not,
I think it's
like,
very common. Absolutely, yeah.
But, like, I was like, oh, I wonder which guy this is going to be. Like, it was just very, like, I was like, I know it's Halloween. I know it's Michael Myers. Like, intellectually, I know that. But as soon as the trailer started, I was like, I wonder.
Yes.
And then, of course, you see his dumb face or his masky face. I don't like all the hospital of it.
It takes place largely and almost entirely within a hospital. So in case
don't
you have,
love hospital.
Yeah, it's going to bring up a lot of hospital stuff. How scary, taking a baseline scary, how scary, Allison, do you find the concept of being stalked by a serial killer in a hospital?
It is. I mean, like, obviously, like, I think it's a lot of, like, nurses and doctors that we follow at some point, like, just based on what I've seen. But, like, there is this part of being, as somebody who's been in the hospital a lot for surgical recovery, like, You are aware of how trapped you are. Yes. And like, I have mobility surgeries. Like, I have back surgery. So it's like, I'm there until I can stand up and walk out, and then I can go like home. But it is like, there is something scary about being in a hospital, like, especially like whatever you have going on. Like, there's a reason you're there, and you are kind of trapped in a, I don't like it. And it's something I'm aware of every time I go to the hospital. I'm like, if something happens here.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
And they definitely play with that as we are, as there's mayhem unfolding unbeknownst to our main character, Laurie Stroud. Yes. And of course, she returns, Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie Stroud. And we also get Dr. Samuel Loomis, who is the doctor trying to.
Loomis is such a.
It's so perfect.
It's such a horror name. I mean, is that why Billy Loomis has that last name?
Yes, it is an homage. It is a nod to this iconic character which is played by the British actor Daniel Pleasance, who absolutely crushes this. And that's what I feel like he makes the movies. I love Jamie Lee Curtis, but you know, she's a very earnest final girl. And Donald Pleasance is giving a little bit more. He used to be on the West End. He's a theater actor. So when he's given a line, he's...
I love a theater actor.
It's so good. Like, it just... It does amp it up into a little bit more of a camp place. But that is what... There are horror movies without those specific characters would be, you know, just... This wouldn't be nearly as good. If you had a straightforward, it's just a sheriff or something, you need a man constantly running around in a lab coat screaming, "He's not a man! It's something different!" There's no life behind his eyes. You know, it's like, good.
Yeah, you do need that guy.
Yeah. And thank God he is back. Okay, great. And then finally, would you like to guess the twist in Halloween 2, Allison?
Guess the twist.
Would you say there's a twist here? Like a real...
Well, you know, I mean,
was there one in the original?
There is a twist. I probably have heard of it, but yes, there is a proper twist, a proper reveal. That being said, looking at now, it certainly isn't a surprise, but it's more of like a, dear God, we looked at this file and it turns out, and then you do find out something about Michael.
Okay, about Michael. I'm going to guess that we find out he's like...
Gay.
Gay, yeah, that's in your medical file.
Diagnosis gay.
I think that Michael, it's going to be that he has some kind of like disease, like a degenerative, like he's like aging prematurely, but in a way that like makes him unkillable in certain ways or something.
Oh, I love this.
So it's like, oh, because he's, or like maybe that he like doesn't feel pain.
Allison, this is excellent guesses. These are phenomenal. Feel pain,
and that's why it's like hard to slow him down in the way that like a human gets slowed down when you're fighting them.
I like it a lot. All right, let us begin ruining Halloween 2, which of course is written by John Carpenter and Deborah Hill, who also produces all the films. And it is directed by Rick Rosenthal. It's his directorial debut. And I think he did a bang up job. He also apparently comes back and directs Halloween Resurrection, which we will get to at some point, of course.
At some point. There are so many Halloweens.
In the future. Let us begin. We open with the song Mr. Sandman.
Oh, no.
I always associate that movie with Crybaby. Did you ever see the John Waters movie, Crybaby?
Yes, of course.
Which is something I remember seeing, going over like people's houses and watching that movie all the time. I love that movie.
John Waters, known Baltimorean and thus Maryland legend.
They're at the Academy Museum. They're doing a retrospective of his work, and I went there, and it was so great. I mean, it's pretty basic. Like, it's like, you know, it's kind of like if you didn't know any of his work, it's kind of like an intro, but it was really wonderful. And just sort of seeing, I want movies that are, you know, grody. I want something that feels real and authentic, which I've talked about forever.
Yes.
And seeing that, it's like, oh, the whole point was to scare and horrify. And I feel like then to bring that to Crybaby, which is a musical and about the 50s, like he crushes it. And obviously Hairspray, so you know, like it, but Mr. Sandman is a scene in that where I think of it so fondly. And so we're entering into this movie with Mr. Sandman, sort of drawing the parallel of Michael Myers being the boogeyman, being the Sandman, a man of nightmares. And on the screen it says Haddonfield, Illinois, October 31st, 1978. Allison, we are starting immediately after the events of the original Halloween.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Literally, we are starting actually before the ending, so they are showing us, don't worry, again, please listen to the Halloween episode.
Yes. But if you haven't yet, now would be the time.
Yeah, but listen, John, Deborah, and Rick here, they knew that maybe we're going to need a little catch-up, you know?
Right.
And yes. So we're starting a little bit before the end of the last movie. So we are ending with Laurie Strode. Remember, she's babysitting. We have Tommy and Lindsay. She says, go to the next door neighbor and call the police. So get out of here. And the kids run screaming out of the house and run past, you guessed it, Dr. Loomis, who is on the street looking for Michael Myers, sees children running screaming and a door standing open. He's no dummy. Michael Myers is in this fucking house.
Absolutely he is.
Lori has already been battling him and is under the impression he is dead. And of course, as she sort of collapsed against the door frame, she's on the second floor of this home. We see Michael get back up off the floor, come up behind her, and start strangling her just as Dr. Loomis mounts the stairs to the second floor landing, points his gun, shoots Michael point blank, unloads, like empties the clip, as Michael sort of jerks backwards and finally gets to the window and falls out of the second story balcony to the grass below.
Okay.
And Lori.
That was the end of the first.
So that was the end of Halloween. And Lori says, was that the boogeyman? And Dr. Loomis says, as a matter of fact, it was. Of course, when Dr. Loomis runs downstairs, we see sort of a comically perfect man-sized print in the dewy lawn, but no Michael Myers. He is gone.
Was that in the first movie?
Yes. Well, we see him look down. And we see he's gone from the lawn. So now we're picking up. Dr. Loomis runs down.
Right. Now we're in the new.
Now we're in the new. And he touches the grass. It's covered in blood. So Michael's clearly bleeding.
Okay.
He appears to have been shot 6 times and is still moving, which is bad news.
Bad news bears.
And we see a neighbor come out and see Dr. Loomis on the lawn and say, what's going on? And Dr. Loomis says, call the sheriff. Tell him I've shot him, but he's still on the loose. And the neighbor says, is this a joke? I have been getting trick-or-treated all night. And Dr. Loomis, he said, I've been trick-or-treated to death all night. And Dr. Loomis turns and says, you don't know what death is.
And now I like this performance.
It's so good. Like, it's like every line is just him yelling, you don't know what death is, and storming out. So when he turns away, of course, we immediately kick into our classic Halloween music. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do, which I wrote do-do-do-do-do-do-do as if I would remember if I hadn't known it. But Halloween 2, Jamie Lee Curtis, Donald Pleasance, and then sort of a jack-o'-lantern being pulled apart to reveal a human skull. And let me tell you, that shit hits every time. I'm like, all right, you're getting me going.
I'm in.
So we're of course watching through Michael's POV, the classic killer POV. We hear his heavy breathing. He's in the alleyways sort of behind the houses. We see a dog barking at him. We see trick-or-treaters on the sidewalk because there's still a bunch of kids out. And so when he's wearing a mask, when people see him, they don't immediately clock that's Michael
Myers.
It's
like, it's a guy. Yeah.
And so no one in the town knows this has happened yet. So basically, Loomis is now calling the sheriff, calling people, and getting the news out. But Michael is still loose in the short amount of time before news hits the public domain, right? Yeah. And we see the sheriff roar up to Loomis. And it's Sheriff Lee Brackett, who we also saw in the first movie, who has been involved in the search. He knows everything. He knows about Michael Myers. And Dr. Loomis is in a total panic, which I really appreciate about, like, he's no longer cool, calm, and collected. He's screaming at the sheriff, I shot him 6 times. I shot him in the heart. And he screams, and you can tell he's just improvising. He goes, this man, he's not human. And the way he says this guy is like, he's, like, he would actually say, he's like, no, my character wouldn't say this guy. This man, he's not human.
This man.
But this guy, he's not human.
I'm a man of science. I'll say he's a man.
Unfortunately, of course, Michael is still on his nighttime walk, and he comes up to the back of a house with a jack-o'-lantern to see an older woman making ham sandwiches for herself and her husband, Harold. And, she's calling to him in the living room. He's watching, Night of the Living Dead, again, a lovely little homage. to another phenomenal movie that we have done on the podcast. Please go listen to Night of the Living Dead, a classic for a reason. Yes. When she goes into the living room to see, ask her husband if he wants mayo and mustard, he's of course asleep. Michael enters the kitchen and grabs her knife off the cutting board. And as the woman stands in the doorway of the TV room, a news bulletin cuts in about three dead bodies being found, all of Michael's victims, in Haddonfield. So now news of his killings have starting to spread. This woman's like, oh my God. The movie sort of, we see, also we see Night of the Living Dead. So we hear the classic line in Night of the Living Dead.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
When they see the man in the cemetery before they realize he's a zombie and he's sort of teasing Barbara. And of course, then they immediately are attacked by zombies. Unfortunately, the homeowner walks back to her cutting board to finish making her sandwiches and the knife is gone. And there is blood next to her sandwiches. So she starts screaming. Yeah. Also, this is just a town where everyone's doors are just unlocked. Like, their back doors. And I, like, that's how I grew up. Like, the door, if you're home, it didn't, the door wasn't necessarily locked. Like, you're going in and out. You're indoor, outdoor.
Yeah, I would say that, like, growing up, doors weren't necessarily locked. I don't, my parents now, I think, lock their doors much more frequently. Or regularly,
yes.
But
yeah.
Growing up in the burbs, like, it was regularly like, oh, like, the front, like, the screen door is closed, but it's not locked, and you can just walk out.
Yeah, my parents always be like, lock the door when we're not home. Because if we're home, it's fine, somebody's home. They're more concerned, like, somebody just coming in and stealing something, not Michael Myers showing up.
Same. Right.
Understandably. Unfortunately, the homeowner is screaming, and so the next door, there's a teenage girl, Alice. She comes out the back of her house and tries to yell, Mr. and Mrs. Elrod, are you okay? You know, but they're not replying. She runs back inside and calls not 911, but her friend. And she says, ugh, I heard screaming from the Elrods. His wife's always picking on him. He's probably just snapped and started to beat her. Anyways, my parents are gone for the night. It's like, well, the 80s, early 80s, man.
Different time.
Yeah. And her friend on the phone says, didn't you hear? Teens were found murdered on Orange Grove. It's on the radio. Alice turns on the radio and says, Sally, I can hear the sirens. That's right down the street. And you see sort of Alice starting to put together, like, that's like two blocks away.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, within her home, she hears something heavy and metal hitting the ground. She whips around to look sort of through the living room to the front door. There's nothing there. But she does see that the door is open. She puts the phone down and her friend on the phone is like, Alice? Unfortunately, she goes to walk towards the front door to shut it. Only to have Michael Myers jump vertically into frame and stab her, murdering her.
A jump stab?
And what's interesting is, like, the way it's shot, it's like, it looks like he was just crouched on the ground and she would have seen him. Like, he's looking, like, she walked past him. It wasn't like he was under a table.
Right. Where is he allegedly coming from?
He's coming from everywhere. And that's the thing about Michael Myers. He's got you dead to rights no matter everywhere. Where you're at. So, obviously, the sheriff has called all of his police officers to the house where Lori was babysitting. So that's where the murder victims are. They've cordoned off the house. And unfortunately, by the time they get there, there's already press and media starting to swarm. Because that would be a huge deal in a small town that the three people have been murdered. 100%. And Lori is only just now getting wheeled out on a stretcher. So Lori has been stabbed at least once. And so is okay, but is not doing well and has to be taken to the hospital. And as they load her into the ambulance, she says, please, whatever you do, don't put me to sleep. Like, she doesn't want to be put under. And she's sort of panicking about it. They're like, don't worry. And one of the paramedics is a young guy. I think he's supposed to be like 18, 19, like he's just out of high school, recognizes Lori as someone who goes to school with his younger brother, Ziggy. And it tells the driver, like, oh, I know her. Her dad's own Strode Realty. And it's like, oh, shit, you know, who cares? Like, so they drive to Haddonfield Memorial Hospital. And we sort of see, again, like, little moments that I love in John Carpenter movies. In the first Halloween, you see Annie and Lori smoking a joint and driving. And then they see the sheriff, who's Annie's dad. And they're like, oh, God, and they freak out. Like, I just love that. But we see a mom taking her kid who looks like he's been hit in the mouth with a baseball or something, or, like, fell. So his mouth is gushing blood, and he has ice in his mouth and a towel. But it just looks like a normal, it's like so gruesome, but it's just a normal household accident. But like when you're a kid, it's so scary. So
just blood at all is terrifying.
Yeah. And gushing out of a child's mouth, you hate to see it.
You do.
And so they take them inside, and the nurse, we see, okay, we called in the doctor on call. We weren't really expecting anything, but now Laurie Strode's coming in, and we need the doctor here. His name is Dr. Mixter, and we find out that he was at the country club all night, and even though he was on call, he's drunk. So when he arrives, they just start putting cups of coffee in his hand. And I was like, man, you got to think, how often did that happen in the past? I feel like that now you really can't get away with that.
Yeah, now it's – but I think 25, 30 years ago, that's happening all the time.
Yeah. So they put Laurie in a hospital bed, and Dr. Mixter says, like, well, when's the last time you had a tetanus shot? Like, we have to type your blood. Laurie, of course, is just like, it's Michael Myers, you know, like panicking. And so, like, well, we need to give her blood transfusion because of all the bleeding, because of her stab wound. So we're going to sedate you. And she's like, please don't put me to sleep. Please don't put me to sleep.
I'd be scared.
And she says, please. But they're like, the doctor injects, you know, some sort of sedative into her arm. And we see a lot of needles going into the flesh in this film. So if that's like you're squeamish about, and I get it, there's a lot of that right up top. Meanwhile, the sheriff and Loomis are driving around the neighborhood, and Loomis is like, has a gun in his hand and is shining a flashlight out the window. Like, and everyone he sees, he's like, turn right. That's him. And it's just a tree. You know, it's like, look at that. And it's like a dog.
Imagine being like on the street and a car drives by with like a flashlight and a gun pointed out the window.
And the sheriff's like, you have to calm down. And, he's like ordering the sheriff out, and he's like, Dr. Loomis, I hate to point this out here, you let him out. Like, you're his own goddamn doctor. Because remember, he escaped when they were transferring him. And it's like, what was the plan? Did you knew this guy was like this. You should have taken more precautions.
Yes.
And he says to Loomis, look, you couldn't have shot him 6 times and have him live. You must have shot at him 6 times and missed him. I mean, that happens. That's no judgment.
Yeah.
No man could be shot 6 times and keep going. And Loomis says, no. This is no man. Well, that's not good. Allison, they spot what essentially looks like a Michael Myers in the distance and pull over. And there's all these like sort of teens on the sidewalk, like drunk or trick-or-treating, like all in costumes. And so Loomis pulls out his gun and runs out of the car screaming, Michael.
Cool.
And the sheriff grabs his hand like, you cannot gesture wild with a gun when there are teenagers in front of you. Ooh. Also, we don't know if that's Michael Myers or a guy with a mask.
Yeah, it is Halloween, after all. Allison, the holiday, not the film.
Exactly. They just think it's regular Halloween. They don't know we're watching them. Allison, this Michael Myers wanders into the street and is immediately run down by a police cruiser, who not only hits this person, but slams the guy into a parked van, and the whole thing explodes into flames. So this, so we're seeing this Michael Myers mask melt onto this motherfucker's head, and Loomis and the sheriff runs over. The sheriff goes, was it him? Was it him, Loomis? And of course, Loomis is like, I don't know. He's on fire. I didn't know about this. Yeah. But they don't have time to answer because one of the deputies arriving, Deputy Gary, he is here to tell them that they are IDing the 3 bodies, and one of them is the sheriff's daughter, Annie, who we saw earlier. It was she was also babysitting in the last movie. She and Laurie smoked a joint. They're friends from high school. She has been murdered by Michael Myers. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the sheriff is devastated by this, yes. And he and Loomis get into the deputy's cruiser so he could go identify the body. Back at the hospital, we see the mom and the kid with the bloody mouth. They leave the hospital. Okay. And we see several nurses whose names will be revealed in time. And the 2 paramedics, Jimmy and Bud, they're all watching the news, listening to the news, because now everyone in town knows this is happening. So we get this reporter, Robert Mundy. And Robert Mundy is on the scene just trying to get every graphic detail, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. And everyone now knows there's an escaped murderer named Michael Myers in the town. The paramedic Jimmy has sort of like, I don't know what you'd call this, sort of like a white knight, like he wants to be the hero. So now he wants to go visit Laurie in her bed. So she's in a hospital room now. She's unconscious. And he walks in to her room while she's asleep, and he runs his finger over her hand. Jimmy, I'm going to stop you right there. I'm going to stop you right there, bud. And Laurie wakes up and he says hi, and they kind of chat, sort of like, well, how are you doing with, you know, everything that's been happening, you know, that guy's killing people. And we get the head nurse, Virginia Alves. Her name is pronounced, is spelled Alves, but they all keep saying Alves, so I'm just going to say Alves. So she is a head nurse. She's no fucking nonsense. She's also a woman of color, who I believe is the only person of color. Now, again, not that I have to call it every time, but it's just nice to see. In the 80s, yeah. Like, okay.
1981? I mean,
all
right.
All white people. And she's also a wonderful everyone in this is like a great character actor where it's like, oh, you need me to be a strict nurse? Guess what? I'm going to be that nurse.
Got it. Strictest nurse.
And so she, reasonably enough, was like, Jimmy, get the fuck out of my patients. Like, she knows him. He's obviously like one of the few paramedics in town. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. What are you doing? And he's like, oh, sorry. I'm just visiting her and saving her in my mind. And I'll be the hero. And I'm sure I won't be murdered by Michael Myers. Anyways, I just want to involve myself in the plot line as much as I could. So she kicks him out and she says, sorry about that, Lori. And letting her know, so you have a stab wound, but you also have a fracture in your leg. But it's not a full break, so the doctor wants to wait in the morning. We're going to do x-rays and set it. So right now it's just bandaged, so you cannot get up and walk, or it's going to be really painful. But we're going to give you a ton of medication, and, you know, you should be set. And she sets out, and Jimmy stops in again to see Lori. And he's like, do you want a Coke? Which I did think was nice. I'm sure if I had been attacked by a serial, I would like a delicious cold.
Oh my God, a cold, regular Coke. I mean, honestly, bottle. I prefer a diet at this point, but like, yeah.
Oh, I probably would too. But again, she kicks him out, and the other paramedic, Bud, says we have another call, so they leave. We see Robert Mundy, the reporter, on the scene where, again, the alleged murderer, Michael Myers, has killed three people. He's now saying that they believe he may have been just killed and burned to death in a car accident. It's unconfirmed. They have to confirm the identity of the body, but his legacy lives on in the death of these three teenagers who have been sliced and diced in this Haddonfield home. And another reporter, we certainly see them, like, they're instructing, like, okay, you have to get sign-offs if you're getting a quote. Unless it's a teenager, you have to get the parents. But honestly, just get the teenager to sign it themselves. We could argue that in court later. Like, they're trying to get into this as much as they can, right?
Yes.
Unfortunately, listen, they bring the sheriff to identify his daughter Annie's body. Well, the body is on a stretcher outside the house in front of everybody, including the press.
Like, no.
And I think that was probably just that. They just needed to shoot.
They needed it to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, he pulls down the sheet. It's Annie. And she did.
Yeah.
And the sheriff is in shock and says, I have to go home and I have to tell my wife. I can't let her find out from the news. Mm-hmm. And they say, go ahead. And in the meantime, Deputy Gary is going to sort of take over. The sheriff turns on Loomis and screams, you let him out. This is your fault. And it obviously wasn't Loomis's intention, but if you know that he's like this, and Loomis keeps saying that he knows he's not a man, well, then why do you give him the opportunity? What was the plan here?
Right. You knew this was a possibility.
Yeah. So the sheriff storms away to go tell his poor wife that their child has been murdered. And the deputy's like, oh, so Dr. Loomis, anything else we could do for you? Haddonfield really appreciates everything you've done for the town. And Loomis says, well, we have to make sure that guy who burst into flames actually is Michael Myers. And Tim was like, of course it's him. Like, he was wearing the outfit. Who is with this guy? But Loomis says, I worked with Michael for 15 years.
There was nothing within him, neither conscience nor reason, that wasn't even remotely human. An hour ago, I stood up and fired six shots into him. He just got up and walked away. I am talking about the real possibility that he is still out there.
And he says, get a dentist and I'll meet you at the coroner's office in a half an hour.
Get a dentist?
Sounds like my kind of Saturday night.
Because also, is that what dentists do? Like, identify?
I think so.
Are there dentists where it's like...
Like a forensic dentist?
I guess forensic. Not just like any dentist.
I think maybe a lot of dentists could do that because basically...
I think any dentist could. But like, isn't there somebody who that's their job?
I gotta imagine. But maybe if you're a small town, maybe you would use a local dentist because it's like...
I guess.
I guess if a body's been...
They should be calling it the feds at this point.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, considering how this is going, which is not well, you want to get more people there. But it's like...
Yeah, you need some manpower. But yeah, I guess it's like anybody who can help, like, let's get them on the case.
And I guess if the body is so badly burned, you can't tell what they look like. The dental records is the only way to ID. Yeah. So it's like, get a dentist. At least they can see if the x-rays look the same.
Sure.
We're not dentists here, obviously.
No, we are not.
Meanwhile, we see Nurse Karen. She's leaving a Halloween party with her friend Darcy. Darcy's like, can you drive me home? And Karen's like, I'm going to be late. Nurse Alves is going to be so fucking pissed at me. I'm always late. And it's like, okay, I'll drop you off. So she's headed over to the hospital. They're walking towards her car. And we see a kid with a boombox playing another radio report that says Laurie Strode. In the radio report, Allison, they say Laurie Strode has been taken to Haddonfield Memorial Hospital. Don't put that on the radio when there's an active serial killer on the loose.
That just seems like we don't need to know what hospital anyone is going to ever.
Yeah. The kid then runs into someone. It's the actual Michael Myers, of course, who just bumps him and keeps walking. And we see Karen, the nurse, pull into the hospital parking lot and rush in late for her shift, not noticing that in her back seat is Michael Myers. So now Michael Myers is at the hospital.
Okay.
So from here on out, hanging. It's going to be hospital mayhem for the most part.
Got it.
We meet the security guard, Mr. Garrett, who is, of course, not looking at the security cameras. He is reading a magazine, and he is watching whatever, like, the late-night horror movie is. He doesn't give a fuck. He is not doing his job. He'd give a shit. And also, on the movie, there are sounds of, like, screams and broken glass. So it's like, even if you heard that in the hospital, you would just assume it's the movie.
You'd be like, oh, the movie's on.
This guy stinks at his job, but he
buzzes. That's bad. Yeah. You can't do that.
So Karen's coming in, like, the employee entrance, and Mr. Garrett buzzes her in. So she comes in, you know, puts on her fabulous, cunty little white nurse's outfit. And I feel like I have this tension where it's like, it is not good that as a nurse, you had to dress really hot, but also it looks like just like a white dress with like the little nurse's hat and a pink belt. I'm like, I'm sorry. I love it.
It's chic as hell. It's so and good. Like for the sake of cinema, I'm so happy. But like when I think back, I'm like, I want my medical professionals to be as comfortable as possible.
Right. And that's why we invented scrubs, where it's like no one should have to like wear a girdle to go drape someone's abscess or something, you know. But she looks great. She looks dynamite. In the cafeteria, we see another nurse, Janet, is talking to Jimmy and Bud, the paramedics. And she's like, you know, my friend Julie saw Michael Myers yesterday. She's in town. They're like, you're a liar. He didn't escape until last night. Your friend's just trying to get attention. And she, basically, Bud says, your friend's a liar and a moron. And she's like, well, you don't have to be mean. She just thought she saw him. So Bud's an asshole, so we know that he will die.
I'd rather somebody be thinking they see him than denying that he's around.
Also, if he's not even human, like, you don't know what you fucking saw. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Karen, the nurse that just arrived, comes and flirts with Bud. So they have, like, a little something going on. And when she walks away, he sings, much like in My Bloody Valentine, where they sing a song about the waitress being a virgin. He sings a song, the lyrics for which, we'll put it in here, is Amazing Grace, come sit on my face. Don't make me cry. I need your pie. And to Jimmy's credit, Jimmy said, could you shut up?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Stop.
And he's like, they're watching the news, you know, and he's like, that could have been your brother, Mark. It could have been Ziggy. Like, what is, like, this is a horrible thing. Like, why are you being like this? But he's like, listen, let's cut the shit. I know why you're mad is that you're interested in Lori. I saw how you looked at her. Let me tell you, you could date the nurses, but do not date the patients. It never ends well. Believe me, I've tried.
What?
It's like, oh my God.
Hey.
But clearly Jimmy is interested. That's like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And so Nurse Alves does yell at Karen, says, you're late again. 15 minutes could be between life and death for one of the patients. Also, they have a nursery in there. So it's like they have other patients in the hospital. It's not, it doesn't seem like there's that many, but it's not like it's just Lori, you know? And so Nurse Alves just goes, rips into Karen. Karen's like, I'm really sorry. I really apologize. She's like, okay, fine. So Nurse Alves starts walking Karen through the list of patients. Unfortunately, as they go through it, we see Michael Myers just walking, sauntering down the hallway of the hospital, leisurely going from one room to the other, which are mostly empty. So he's always got a million places to hide.
He's just hanging out. Yeah.
Jimmy also stops in again to see Lori, and he sits down. And he says, wow, you know, they really should have been a better eye on that Michael Myers guy. Allison, Lori doesn't know the guy was Michael Myers until right now. Like, she just knew that some guy attacked her. And she's like, wait, Michael Myers, the guy who killed his sister as a kid, who lived in the weird, like, haunted house in our town? Like, everyone only knows this, like, old Myers place where this murder happened, you know, when Michael was a child. He's like, I thought he was in some sort of, like, mental hospital somewhere. That was him? He showed up? And Jimmy's like, yeah, the radio's saying he escaped last night and came to town and murdered those people. And Lori's like, why me? Like, why was I involved? Like, that's so bizarre. And again, Nurse Alves comes in and is like, Jimmy, if I see any more again, Jimmy, I'm gonna freak out, and kicks him out. And she says to Lori, hey, we're trying to find your parents. They were at the country club party that Dr. Mixer was at, but they aren't there now and they're not at home. So, like, do you know where they are? And Lori's like, I was just attacked by a serial killer. You figure it out. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah.
Allison, Nurse Al says, okay, I'll call back over there. She picks up the phone to find out, of course, the phone lines are dead in the entire hospital.
No.
And she, Nurse Al calls Nurse Janet to go tell Mr. Garrett, the security guard, the phone lines are down. Can you go take a look at the breaker, telephone, electricity? Phone I don't room. Know. He says, all the phones are down, so tell him to do it quickly. Lori says, wait, sorry, what's going on with the phones? And Nurse Al says, don't worry about it. I'll let you know as soon as we find your parents. I'll be right back.
No.
Allison, at this point in the movie, what would you do?
What would you do?
I'm leaving.
Yeah.
I'm going to go. I'm going to get in my car. I don't think that becomes an option because I know there's some tires that get slashed.
Absolutely.
But I would just get the living fuck out of there.
Yeah.
I don't care. I'm going to find a phone to call the police and be like, just go to the hospital. I won't be there, but like clearly you'll see something's up.
Yeah, just sort of doing anything. I think it's crucial.
Anything.
Throwing a brick through the window, like crawling out. Just
whatever you need to do.
Whatever, something to put a little space or a little obstacle between you and Mike Myers showing up. Whatever that looks like.
Whatever that is.
Get creative. Something. Get creative.
Ruined is brought to you by Factor. It is so hard to plan and prepare and eat healthy meals every single night of the week, but I'm super excited about Factor. You get every meal is fresh, never frozen, and is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. You can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week. I mean, this is exactly what I need. It's spring. I want to do stuff. I want to stay fueled, but I don't want to waste any time preparing or shopping or doing any of the stuff that it is to feed yourself as an adult.
Absolutely, and I feel like we've all had the experience of like getting home and being like, oh my God, I can't cook an entire meal. So for me, Factor is a great option in terms of like having food there, like having food on hand. It's also me not wasting groceries. You know what I mean? You can imagine, you see what I'm like on the pod. You can imagine what my fridge looks like. In this way, I have prepared meals ready to go. They're healthy. They are waiting for me.
And it's great because you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. So like if you're going to be eating out a lot, you can do fewer. If you're like in a kind of a vegan mode, you can do vegan and you can pause and reschedule deliveries all to just suit your lifestyle. And they're celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals.
Head to factormeals.com/ruined50 and use the code RUINED50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code RUINED50 at factormeals.com/ruined50. 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Absolutely, you're dead right. Speaking of dead, Mr. Gare, the security guard, gives Nurse Janet his other walkie-talkie and says, I'm going to go check out the telephone poles or outside or the some sort of telephone structure outside the hospital. Sure. It's behind the hospital and it's extremely poorly lit alley. So just go ahead, take this walkie-talkie that you don't know how to use. And she even says, I don't know how to use this. And he says, don't worry about it. I'll be right back. Allison, he of course goes into the alley and hears a sound of the dumpster, and a braver man than I opens the lid only to have a cat leap at him and knock him to the ground before scampering away. Allison, would Riz, your cat, would he work in cahoots with Michael Myers for any reason?
I don't think he works with anyone.
Okay, great.
He's an independent. He's kind of a loner. Yeah. He's not smart. And for that, I love him.
Yeah.
But I don't think that, like, he would cooperate with someone.
That makes sense.
And, like, do their bidding, especially if there's, like, there would have to be, like, a lot of treats and a lot of chicken and cucumbers in it for him.
Yeah. Which sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Mr. Garrett finds the door of the maintenance office, which sort of is, like, the storage. It's, like, there's a desk in there for the maintenance man, but then it's, like, storage of a lot of tools, a lot of a giant sort of scissors and pliers and wrenches and
great.
Metal
good,
implements.
Good. You want those around.
And then within it, there is a another door that says keep out. Of course, the lock is undone and the door is open. So Mr. Garrett does continue into the storage area. He has a flashlight. It might as well just be dark. Like, this is the worst flashlight. It's not doing shit.
Yeah.
And luckily, at least he calls it to Nurse Janet and says, I think someone broke into the storeroom leave and go find a phone and call the police. Like, just leave the hospital. Yes. Allison, she can't use the fucking walkie-talkie. And I'm sure I'd be in the same predicament. So she's, like, getting individual words. And she's like, Mr. Garrett, I don't know how to use this. And she's trying to tell her someone has to drive to the sheriff's office. Because he's not entirely stupid. Unfortunately, Allison, Mr. Garrett is still half stupid because he hears a noise deeper into the storeroom. And he follows it in. And it's like, Mr. Garrett, you do enough to say someone has to go drive to the sheriff's office. And you're going to go in and take on Michael Myers?
Right. Like, what are you, like, you know what's happening.
There's also a couple of moments where, like, it continues. Like, he opens a closet door and a bunch of boxes fall on him. It's very, like, sitcom, like, 90s sitcom. Do you remember that episode of Friends where they finally open the closet door in Monica's apartment? And it turns out she's a neat freak, but they open the door and all this shit falls out.
Everything's in there. Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Basically, that's what happened when he opens a closet.
Great.
Unfortunately, he goes to shut the door. He turns only to have Michael Myers bury a hammer in Mr. Garrett's skull. Over at the coroner's office, the deputy and Dr. Loomis arrive to work with the coroner to ID the body that was burned. So sort of, is this Michael Myers or is this just some poor bastard who died? Mm-hmm. And they find out that unfortunately the body has no fillings. So it's a young person. But Michael Myers is only 21 and also doesn't have fillings. So it's like, well, shit. And the coroner says,
I've had fillings since I was young.
Oh, I had fillings since I was a kid. I guess those are children.
Soft teeth.
Those are also kids' teeth. I guess you get new teeth.
But you got fillings and baby teeth? No.
I don't know.
No, you didn't. I don't think.
I might have.
Anywho, you only have them for a few years.
You have them for a little bit. Regardless, Michael Myers doesn't have them. And the coroner says, well, we could do a full workup. Like, we could do point-by-point analysis, but it's going to take a couple hours. Like, I can't – this is not something I can just look at. I have to, like,
Do it. Eyeballing it.
And Dr. Loomis like, we don't have a couple hours. It's like, okay, well, whose fucking fault is that?
You figure something out then.
Yeah, bitch.
It's not the dentist's fault.
The sheriff arrives, but, like, the way it seems that Deputy Gary has been put formally in charge of the investigation, so now he's telling the sheriff what to do. Mm-hmm. And so he makes the call. Everyone's going back out. We cannot assume Michael Myers is dead. We have to assume he's still in the town. And the sheriff says, absolutely, you got it. So that was the right call. It's like, we can't assume this guy is Michael Myers. Let's just keep.
Yeah, right.
Meanwhile, they drive back to the old Myers house to see, did Michael Myers go back there? Which they also did in the Halloween movie. Like, is he living in the old Myers house? Did he return there? Is that like his home base?
Right.
They arrive there and all the townspeople are gathering, throwing rocks and sort of taking their fear and aggression over these murders out on the house itself. And Loomis.
I mean, there are worse things to do. But. Yeah.
And Loomis says, of course, the tribe, one of their numbers was butchered. This is awake. It's like, okay.
Okay.
Of course, when they arrive, the sheriff checks it out. There's nobody in there. And they're outside Loomis' house, or outside the Myers house. Everyone's sort of yelling and throwing rocks. And the deputy says, go search it again. I was like, oh. Can you say that to your superior?
Excuse me.
I don't know how being a sheriff works.
Yeah.
So the sheriff goes back in. They're going to do a search. And Loomis explains the story of Michael as a child murdering his sister. Mm-hmm. And then when he was brought into the hospital, which he's been there for 15 years. So he murdered his sister when he was six. He became very, he was very static. He didn't talk. He didn't move. Mm-hmm. He was silent and stationary. And that he thinks that kind of lulled the staff into complacency. Mm-hmm. So like, okay, so you mean you? Like, you were you're in control.
You were his caretaker.
Guy.
You were his medical staff. Like, what? A question.
Yes.
That maybe I forget if it was addressed in the first movie. When did the mask come to play?
The mask seems like it was, I believe, from Jump. I believe he had the mask from the beginning.
Like, was he wearing it as a child?
Let's see. In my mind, yes, but I realize it might be, I might be making that up. Let's see. No, it looks like he got the mask. Yes. Okay. So he didn't have the mask. When he got to Haddonfield, he got it from from Nichols Hardware Store. Okay. So that's great. Okay. So when he arrives in town, he goes to the hardware store, you know, to pick up a little sundries. And then because it was Halloween, they had a display of Halloween stuff, including a couple masks. That's what it was.
Okay.
I was going to say, Kat, take out me being stupid, but you'd have to take out the whole fucking podcast. So we did find it. So, yeah, so it's a newer acquisition associated also with the town. The town has a lot of meetings, and in this case, the town also gave him his classic mask, which I also makes sense, like, why someone else would have it. So it's like, oh, the person who was wearing it, if that's not Michael Myers, which we know it isn't because we've seen him in the hospital, that guy probably also bought it at the hardware store. So there are multiple masks that are the same mask that are out for sale. Yeah.
Yes.
So they're standing outside. And Loomis is explaining Michael murdering his sister and how everyone assumed they didn't know what Michael really was. And the deputy said, did you? And Loomis just says, yeah. It's like, okay, well then.
Well then, what the hell are we doing here? Like if you knew, this is on you.
Let me just say this. It reminds me of in every Batman movie, and this is an observation from by friend of the pod, Dave Schilling, my ex. And he said, he's like, the thing about every Batman movie is it relies on Batman being a really bad detective. Because if he did figure it out, it would stop the Joker. Like, in fact, he has to be bad at it, or the Batman, like, you know, trying to stop, like, a villain. Because if he did stop it, there wouldn't be a movie. So I think it's like, well, Loomis, it's nice for you to say this, but also it meant nothing because we still ended up here. Like, all that information didn't lead to us not having Michael Myers murdering people in our town, right?
Right.
Allison, two boys run up to them and say, our friend Bennett Traynor, so my boys, I mean like 15, like our friend Bennett didn't arrive home. He was drunk and he was wearing the same kind of mask that the guy was wearing. And so Loomis is like, so maybe we should get that kid's dental records because maybe that was the guy that blew up.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, of course, it was this kid Bennett. This poor bastard. Just then, the sheriff runs over. He has new news. There's been a break-in at the elementary school, and they're pretty sure it's Mike Myers. We're going to the elementary school. So they rush over there. Back at the hospital, Karen sees there's a patient call light. So when the patient hits the button, a light turns on over their room, their door, and then it buzzes. So it's kind of hard to miss. So she walks into the darkened room, leans over the figure in the bed, and a man grabs her. But of course, it's just Bud, the gross paramedic, I hope, dies.
Oh, good. Well, closer to death, I hope.
And Karen sort of pries herself out of her arms, and he says, oh, you're the biggest jerk I ever met. He says, yeah, but you love it. She says, and I'm an idiot for it. It's like, Karen! I guess, like, the only guy you meet who's like, you're age-appropriate, you live in our small town, even though you're an asshole, I guess I'm gonna fuck you in the hospital. And so he starts Bud because he's horny. He's like, we should go to the therapy room. But they're not, they're saying therapy room as if that's something we should know what that is. I'm like, what are you going to go to the therapy room for? But Karen says, I can't leave the kids. And we saw the nursery. Like, it's like, I can't just leave the patients. And she says the kids specifically. Like, I can't. But then she's like, well, maybe I can go in for a little bit. But let me just do some rounds. I'll check on everybody first. And I was like, you know there's a serial killer loose in the town. Don't leave any patients.
Don't leave a bunch of kids alone.
But she's like, let me check everyone and then I'll meet you in the therapy room. Allison, meanwhile, we see Lori's dreaming. So we're in her dream state. And we see her as a child talking to her mother. And her mother, she says to her mother, why don't you tell me anything? And her mother says, I told you, I'm not your mother. It's like, okay, well, clearly you're my mother figure. Why are you yelling at me?
Yeah.
Allison, in her dream, she sees a boy sitting in a chair looking out the window, a boy a few years older than her. And he turns and he looks at her. And she wakes up. And when she looks down, she sees blood dripping onto the floor. Not hers, but she sees and hears blood dripping.
Oh, no.
And she goes back to sleep because she's sedated. Like, she's in and out of sedation.
Right. You're just kind of like, what's real, what's not? Yeah. Like, even if something's happening, you're kind of like,
Allison, Karen, and Bud go into the therapy room, which is a room with it. And thank God, because it's been a while since we had this. There is a therapeutic hot tub. We have not had a proper hot tub scene. I want to say since Mad Men.
Since Thanksgiving camp. Yeah.
Now, I was shocked to see a hot tub in a hospital, but I'm glad
I can't think of any time I've ever seen one. But
and you think you would have as someone perhaps with like spinal stuff. You think water therapy would be good. Like you don't have to put pressure on your spine. You should, if anything, you should get therapeutic hot tub time.
All I want to do is be in a hot tub. I fucking love
hot tubs. Just watching this, I'm like, I know they're going to get murdered here, but anything so good.
I have a terrace and I'm like, I could put what, like, it's girl, like, I couldn't, but
I have
like,
a
it's like
one bedroom. And I was like, could I put a hot tub?
Could I put a hot tub in here? Like all I want is a hot tub.
Are there like, I want to go to a hotel room. I guess you could find a hotel with a hot tub. God, that's probably
it's
expensive.
Like jacuzzi baths, but like not quite a hot, like I want a hot tub. My parents had one when we were growing up and it was the fucking best.
It was very cool in the 90s, like 89s.
We used it all the time.
Oh, that sounds like heaven.
When it was snowing? Get out of here.
Okay, now we're talking. So they're going to go in there and fuck, obviously.
As they should.
And again, it feels like 1981, I'm sure nurses
walk in there. Talk about the hospital hot tub. Who gives a shit?
Yeah. So they get in, they start canoodling. Carrie's like, wow, it's actually really hot in here. And Bud says, that's just me. It's like, okay.
Okay.
Allison, of course, we see Michael Myers turning up the temperature on the hot tub. And they're making out. And eventually she says, Bud, it's honestly too hot in here. I have to get out.
Oh, no.
And he says, no, don't get out. It's too cold out there. And she turns to him and says, it can get cold in here, a.k.a. I'm getting out or I'm not going to fuck you. So he says, that's fine. So he gets out first and he goes in essentially behind a glass partition. So we see him through this opaque glass. He starts to get changed while she's still sitting on the edge of the tub, putting her towel on. Behind her, we see a pantomime of Michael Myers murdering Bud, strangling him while in the nude and dropping his body to the ground.
I hope to God I don't die naked.
All I want in the world is to die.
To die with clothes
with
on.
Clothes on. I know. Ugh. Yeah, absolutely. And so, of course, Karen's back is still turned, and Michael comes in the room and puts his hand on her shoulder. She says, forget it, Bud. I have to go back to work. But do you want to get breakfast later? Michael Myers doesn't answer. Allison, she starts to suck on Michael Myers' fingers. But I'm like, I'm sorry. You would recognize, even if a guy you're casually hooking up with, you would recognize that's not his hand.
Like, hands are pretty.
Yeah.
Like, if you'd never, like, seen someone's hands and never touched them, yeah, sure. Like, you see it, there's a hand involved and you just assume it's theirs. Like, I could see. But, like, you were just in a hot tub with this
person.
Also,
you know that motherfucker's got blood under his fingernails. Like, he doesn't seem like he's taking care of his skin.
Yeah, he's not, like, constantly, like, washing and moisturizing.
Yeah. So she starts sucking on his fingers, and Michael Myers jerks his hands away. That was why he's like, oh. Unfortunately, she then turns. Michael Myers grabs her by the back of the head and dunks her head in the water. He pulls her out. She's screaming. And we see the water's getting hotter and hotter. So he's dunking her in. This is genuinely horrifying. Dunking her in the water.
To drown in, like, basically boiling water in a hot tub at a hospital.
And you see the little meter, and it moves over to scalding. There's, like, a red warning, like, scalding hot. And as he's dunking her over and over again.
How does it even get that hot?
It shouldn't. And finally, he holds her down long enough to drown her. And when he pulls her body back out, her face and her titties are just absolutely falling off. They're falling off the bone. And then he takes her and he just kind of drops her on the ground.
Yeah.
One of the worst ways to go.
Absolutely.
Not simply drowned, but drowned while boiling alive.
Boiling and drowned. Like, either one of those on their own. A horrific death. Together?
Yeah. Over at the elementary school, they find a broken window, some blood, and a children's drawing on the teacher's desk with a knife buried in it. Michael was just like, in case I'm not explaining what's going on, let me just do this.
Yes.
And we see a drawing of a family, a mother, a father, a son, and Allison, a daughter. Uh-oh. And Loomis sees and says, a sister. On the wall in blood, it's written the word Sam Hain. And they're like, what the fuck is this? Who's Sam Hain?
Who's Sam Hain?
Loomis says, it's a Celtic word. The Lord of the Dead festival of the end of summer, October 31st. It's Halloween. Suddenly, a woman appears. Turns out her name is Marion Chambers. And is that the name? That's the name from, is that from Psycho? It's Marion Chambers. Or is that
It's familiar.
Let's see.
But then I was like, didn't I just hear this in this episode? And it's like, I guess not.
I'm thinking of Marion Crane. Yes, so Marion Crane was Psycho. Okay. Marion Chambers.
Very similar.
An homage. Much like in, we just did, It's a Wonderful Knife. An homage to Gail Prescott in Scream. I love horror. But so Marion shows up and says, hey, you're going to have to come back to the institute where Michael escaped from. The governor called and was basically like, why the fuck is a serial killer? Yeah, what the fuck happened? What do you mean you were transferring him? What do you mean you let him escape? It's embarrassing for us. The governor's like, you have to get out of there. The name of the place is Smith's Grove. And she says, you have to come back. And he's like, I have to find my girl. He's like, no, there's a cop outside.
Yeah.
You could potentially be prosecuted for this. They're going to try to find you liable. So, and also you're not finding him. So you're going to get in the car with me and we're going to drive back. And she does say, I apologize, because she was one of the people who thought it was fine to transfer him. She's like, I'm sorry that I didn't believe you when you said there's something on Michael that's not right. Like, there's something more wrong with him. And Lumi says, I can't leave now. But Marion says, you don't have a choice. There's a marshal outside. We are going right now. So yeah. They leave. They get in the car. The marshal's driving them back to Smith's Grove. Meanwhile, Jimmy goes to stop by Lori's hospital room again. And he says to her, I promise not to let anything happen to you. Allison, Lori is staring with her eyes wide open. And Jimmy tries to, like, you know, wake her. He can't do it. He runs to get a nurse because essentially she is, like, passed out with her eyes open.
Right.
Nurse Janet runs to get Dr. Mixter because she's like, if this is what I think it is, she's having a bad reaction to the medication. So she goes to get the actual doctor. Is like, this is out of our purview. Get Dr. Mixter. She runs to his office, which has its own shower running, which is just a fake out. It's just like his shower's running. And then she goes in his office and he's sitting facing his aquarium. And she says, Lori's having a reaction to medication.
Enjoying the fish.
Allison, she reaches out and puts her hand on his shoulder and he swivels around in his chair, only to see that he has a hypodermic needle essentially rammed into his orbital socket. So not in the middle of the eyeball, but sort of like the flesh into the skull of the orbital socket. Mm-hmm. Well, wouldn't you believe it? Michael Myers grabs Nurse Janet from behind and he does the same goddamn thing to her.
Yeah.
And she, of course, collapses. A lot of needlework in this movie.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Jimmy has wherewithal to go find Nurse Alves. Well, unfortunately, he does find her. And also, the lights are basically off. It's one of those things where, like, the lights are on, but it is dark as fuck.
Yeah.
There's, like, emergency lights and stuff. We see the patient call alarm go off. And we see another nurse rush past. And hang on a second. What was that nurse's name? There's so many goddamn nurses. I was like, wait, which one's that one? So one of our remaining nurses, Jill. Okay. So we see Jill, she's rushing past. So everyone's doing the right thing. Like everyone's trying to be like, okay, someone get Nurse Alves, someone go get the doctor, someone go find Mr. Garrett. You know, we see, Nurse Jill rush past to the patient call alarm. Unfortunately, because everyone's scattered, we see the POV of Michael Myers approaching Lori's room. And we see him standing over her bed and raising a scalpel. Mm-hmm. And Michael Myers brings it down into Lori's body.
No.
Allison, he pulls back the sheet. She's already gone. It's just a bunch of pillows. Classic move, Lori.
Classic.
And we see that she's no fucking dummy. She's up and about. She has a fractured leg, but she is hobbling down the hallway to try to hide, to try to get out of there because she knows what's going on. She knows that Michael Myers is going to come for her. Nurse Jill returns to find Lori gone and is like, oh, God damn it. You know, like now she's loose in the hospital. We see Lori kind of like hobbling in her gown down the hallway on the security camera. We see her stumble into a room and sort of try to grab the phone, which is still out. It wouldn't matter. But she sort of collapses and she's in the fetal position and she passes out. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Loomis, they're about to get in the car to leave and drive back to Smith's Grove, and the deputy Gary stops him and says, we're gonna find him, I promise you. And Loomis says, where? And the deputy says, I don't know, which I thought was funny. It's like, I don't know. And so Loomis and Marion and the marshal leave. Jill, the nurse, says, fuck, everything's going to shit. I have to go find Mr. Garrett, only, of course, to find out his post is empty. We already know Mr. Garrett's dead. She doesn't know that.
Right.
On the screen, she's sort of looking in the security room. We see on the screen Michael Myers walking down the hallway. Nurse Jill walks back in that same direction. Then we see her walking in the hallway. Well, what do you know, Allison? They're about to meet in the middle. And right as she's about to open the door where Michael Myers, we just saw him go in, Jimmy puts his hand on Nurse Jill's shoulder and scares her. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he says, everyone's fucking gone. We have to find Lori. I don't know what's going on. I need your help finding her. And she says, you look in the East Wing, and if you don't find anyone, Nurse Jill, get in your car and drive to the sheriff's office. You look for her. If you can't, somebody has to leave and go find the sheriff. Like, it just is what it is.
Yeah.
Which is a great advice that everyone keeps saying and nobody's taking. Everyone who says that just stays in the hospital, right? And on the wall behind them is the shadow cast by the window. And we see that Michael Myers is standing in the room behind them. And we see the shadow, but in such a way that we can see it and they can't. and they leave, not knowing that he is inches behind them. Mm-hmm. Jimmy also starts to look, as he starts to look for Lori, he finds Nurse Alvis dead. She's tied to a gurney, and she has an IV inserted in her arm, and it's her blood that was dripping all over the floor.
Not great.
So when Lori woke and saw it, it was, she's probably on the gurney, and then Michael Myers put her in this room, and now there's a huge pool of blood on the floor. Jimmy turns to leave, and as he does, he slips on the pool of blood, falls to the ground, and knocks himself unconscious. Allison, I gotta ask you at this point, who will survive?
Who will survive?
All right, who we got left?
Okay, so we got Lori.
Yeah, that's Jamie Lee Curtis. Yes. I think that she survives.
Okay, great. That stands for
I know
reason.
She's in some of the other movies.
We've got Jimmy, the paramedic.
I think he's going to die.
We've got Jill, the nurse, who's been very helpful, but she is just one of many nurses. We got to keep that in mind.
Okay, she's probably going to die.
Dr. Loomis.
I think he will make a discovery or like leave information behind, but this is the end of him.
And then I would say the sheriff and deputy Gary.
A lot. There's just so many of these movies that I know are coming that I know we need some carryover. So I'm going to assume that they survive.
Okay, great.
And Michael survives.
In as much as someone who is not a man can survive. So we see the blonde nurse, Jill. She has the wherewithal to say, I'm getting the fuck out of here. Runs to her car. Allison, not only will it not start, tires have been slashed.
Yes.
As have the tires of, I believe it was Nurse Karen's car next to her. So Jill runs back inside. I think that's the wrong move. I think she was afraid that Michael Myers was right there, like in the parking lot. Which I get.
Which I understand. Like,
yeah.
You see the tire slash. There is an idea in your mind that, like, this just happened. Or that he's, like, waiting for you to come out and see that and jump and get you. But, like, I'm just running.
Exactly. Just
away.
Just hoof it.
Run.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Lori literally can't even walk at this point because she's in such pain. So she's crawling out of the room she was hiding in. Broken but unbowed. Mm. And Nurse Jill runs in right as Lori's in the hallway, and Nurse Jill runs and calls to Lori, who turns just in time to see Mike Myers stab Nurse Jill in the back and lift her into the air with his freak strength and then drop her.
Okay.
Lori wisely decides to get up and haul ass. And so she's able to make it into the stairwell ahead of Michael Myers. And she eventually makes it into, you guessed it, the boiler room.
Yeah.
And where she finds Mr. Garris's dead-ass body hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah.
Michael advances on her with a scalpel, but she's able to open a little cellar window and squeeze through it, not to the outside, but to the next room. And she falls onto boxes of medical supplies. So there's, like, shattered glass. And
glass
I assume
and needles.
Needles. And she's, like, rolling over trying to get away from the glass.
Yuck.
Remind me of in the original Suspiria, there's an excellent sequence where somebody squeezes through a tiny window. I won't spoil it here, but it's incredibly scary when you see what she falls into on the other side. But fortunately, she's, again, put a little distance between them. She's able to get to the elevator up from the basement level, only to see Michael advancing on her with his scalpel. And he reaches out, and for a second, it looks like his scalpel is going to stop the elevator door. But the door closes anyway. As a result, Lori is able to get out into the parking lot and is able to find a door. And it's this beautiful, fat, like, they don't make 50s cars, but it's like, and like they do, but it's like the kind of car the Big Bopper would drive.
Sure.
Like, it's like baby yellow, sickening,
huge,
gorgeous. Yeah. And she's able to hide sort of in the footwell of the passenger seat because she can't really run. So it's like, okay, well, at least you're hiding outside of the hospital.
Yes.
As the marshal drives him out of town, Marion Chambers finally turns to Loomis. Shit that she should have said before they left the hospital.
Yeah.
And she says, you know, there's something else I need to tell you. And he's sort of deep in thought. He's like,
the druid priests held fire rituals. Prisoners of war, criminals, the insane, were burned alive in baskets. 2,000 years later, we've come no further.
And Marion's like, well, anyways, the governor ordered the court to unseal a secret file on Michael Myers, which, of course, Loomis replies, impossible. I knew everything about him. Well, it turns out.
Well, maybe not everything.
Allison, they unsealed the secret file. What did they find in the secret file, Allison? What fact about Michael Myers has just been revealed? Do you want to guess?
Maybe he, saw his own death and isn't dead.
Okay.
I don't know why it would have to do with the druids. So.
Right. Well, it turns out that Laurie Strode is Michael Myers' sister. But I like where you were going with this.
Okay. Wow. So that's why he's.
Yes.
After her.
So it turns out, yes, she was the younger sister, 2 years younger than him. And when he committed the crime, she was adopted into her family. So she doesn't even know that she's Michael Myers' sister.
Oh. I wonder, do you think that was a known thing when they were making the first movie? Or do you think that this was like, what a success, we're going to do a sequel. Okay, now what's the sequel about? Like, do you think that, or was it like, this is a franchise and we'll reveal this later?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I kind of assume that this was, they just made Halloween not knowing if they would get a second one.
Yeah.
And this is a way to tie them together.
I mean, I like it.
Yeah.
It seems thought out, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Reading the Wikipedia, and it seems like they had they didn't even have the hope of doing a sequel. Like, they kind of were like, we're going to make this movie. There's not really a chance of us getting a sequel. Yeah. And then when they did, it was kind of exciting. And then when they were making the sequel, they thought, well, the sequel will be the last one. So we want to give you a satisfying ending. Oh,
like an ending.
Yes. And that's why Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, which we'll see eventually, had a totally different plot that had nothing to do with the first
one. Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, and then it turns out they were going to try to make it sort of like The Twilight Zone or make an anthology, which I love. I think that's super fun. But then
love an anthology? Loving Fargo? Anyway.
Oh, yeah. I need to check that out. Yeah, but,
I like it.
But basically, when asked in a 1982 interview what happened to Myers and Loomis, basically, he said, he's basically like, you saw the movie, you saw what happened to them. That's what we're going to, I'm going to leave it at that.
Got it.
So they were not anticipating it would go beyond that. Wanted to give you something a little satisfying. And, so that's why Michael Myers, having killed his first sister, wanted to kill the second, I guess it's just for symmetry's sake. And Lewis says, well, we have to go back. Like, then he's going to kill her. He killed the first one. He's not human in a traditional way. We got to fucking turn this goddamn car around. What are we doing?
Yeah.
And Loomis says, please, we have to go back. Nadar says, I can't do that. I'm under orders. And Loomis says, you're a marshal, right? What do you fellows do? Fire a warning shot? And then Loomis takes out his gun and shoots out the passenger side window.
Okay.
To basically be like, if you don't turn the car around, I'm going to shoot you in the back of the head.
Yeah.
And so the marshal whips that car back around and they drive back to Haddonfield. In the hospital parking lot, we see Jimmy finally escape, and he gets into the driver's seat of the yellow car, only to find Laurie crouching there.
Okay.
And he says, Laurie, I think we're going to be okay. We just need to. And then he passes out face down on the wheel, honking the horn, alerting Michael Myers that there is someone in the parking lot.
Okay.
So she's looking in the front door like, oh God, but there's no Michael yet. So she's able to open the passenger side door. She kind of throws Jimmy off of the wheel, and she falls out and is crawling across the parking lot just as Loomis, Marion Chambers, and the marshal arrive. But she's so weak, she tries to cry out, but it's too late. They've gone inside before she could get a scream out.
No.
With that, Laurie, she returns to the fray because she turns around to see fucking Michael Myers walking out of the darkness across the parking lot at her. And she has to get up and run to the front door. Allison, you know when she gets there, it's locked. So she's screaming for help as Michael Myers approaches. And finally, Dr. Loomis sees her and runs and lets her in just her time. Unfortunately, Michael Myers also enters and Loomis shoots him again. And Michael takes that shot and he does collapse to his knees and then finally to the ground. Now, Dr. Loomis knows this is not going to kill him. It's just going to temporarily stun him. So the marshal goes to approach Michael and Loomis says, do not touch him. He's not dead. And Tara's like, you just shot him. Of course he's dead. What are you talking about? It's like, we already went through this. And he tells Marion, go outside and use the radio in his cop car, call for help. And the marshal's like, we don't need help. You just murdered him. And Loomis apologizes for leaving Laurie. And Laurie looks at them. And Michael Myers is still on the ground. And he's like, why won't he die? And Loomis turns to see the marshal crouching over Mike Myers' body and says,
huge mistake.
Get the fuck away from him. And the marshal says, but he stopped breathing. No, my friend, that's
was
you.
Was he ever breathing?
Michael Myers sits up and slits the driver's throat with his trusty scalpel, leaving Loomis and Lori to run for their lives back into the hospital. So they now can't go out the front door. They have to go, they're forced back into the hospital. There are also other patients here, like, while this is all going on. He's able to cornered and finally gets them both into a room. And he punches out the little window in the door to get to them. Mm-hmm. And then essentially just starts pulling the door to pieces. Like the wood of the door is splintering. And Loomis goes to fire on him again. Allison, his gun clicks. He has no more bullets.
Oh, no.
Michael comes in and just immediately stabs Dr. Loomis, who collapses. And doesn't look good for him, which leaves just Lori. And before Loomis collapsed and presumably dies, he had the marshal's, the driver's gun. And he tried to give it to Lori. She's like, I can't take it. I can't take it. And so he kind of puts it on the ground near her.
Yeah.
So in this moment, she is forced again to become the final girl. Mm-hmm. And she advances. And in that moment, Lori says, tries to appeal to him, like, Michael, stop. And he does have this moment where he sort of hears her and he cocks his head. And then she lifts up the gun and shoots him. She shoots him in both eyes. So then blood is streaming out of the eye holes of his mask.
Can we not?
And he's sort of swinging blindly on her and making these like pathetic animal noises. And we see Dr. Loomis get up, obviously dying. And he turns on a nearby tank of gas. And so does Lori. I don't know what kind of flammable gases they have at a hospital. Whatever it is, that's the one.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like Thanksgiving. You know, it's like, oh, a tank of gas? Well, let's turn it on. And Loomis yells at Lori, get out now. And she's able to get past Michael because he can't see. And he's sort of like, sort of whimpering and like an animal and swiping. And Loomis says to him, it's time, Michael. And Loomis takes out a lighter and flicks it on. And the room explodes.
Yeah.
And Lori is barely down the hallway. Like, it shoots her down the hallway. But luckily, she's just thrown to the ground. She's not killed or, you know, she's able to hide behind a drinking fountain. And as she's crouched there, we see, and this to me is one of the standout horror images of all time, which is Michael Myers walking out of the fire, which is concerning the hallway, completely in flames towards her until he collapses. And we see his mask start to melt and burn. Dawn breaks and the fire department and the police have arrived. And the sheriff comes over to the deputy and says, there's 10 dead inside so far. So I don't know who could have lived. If you're anywhere near that, the patients are dead. And also obviously the security guard and all the nurses and the paramedics.
Yes.
And the smoke is still floating out of the hospital. The fire is out, but it's still smoking. And we see Robert Mundy and the other reporters flock as Lori is being taken into another ambulance. And she says, can I ride in the front? They say, no, we can't let you do that. And as the ambulance drives away, we see the people of Haddonfield arrive to see the destruction. Another wake. And as they drive in the ambulance, we see Lori staring and thinking, imagining Michael's mask burning and melting. And we hear the dulcet tones of Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Do, 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 do. The end.
Wow.
Iconic.
Iconic. Yeah, that image of him in the on fire is like, has made its way to me.
Yes.
Like, I've seen that.
I'm so glad. It's, like, having seen it before, I'm still like, yep, absolutely. Yep, John Carpenter's done it again. But you also see, like, how that makes sense as an ending to two movies.
Yes.
But I think, like, I mean, like every movie now, you know, like we had the three most recent Halloweens. The only reason there were three of them is because they wanted to pay for them, money. You know?
Yeah.
And now we're going to have, apparently, The Exorcist Believer.
Right. It's like, just spend that money on new things.
There's a million incredible new horror ideas every year. That is what's so great about the genre. To have to go and
back to this well that's dry.
And I believe in great remakes. I think the Suspiria remake, it's not better than the original, but it's really good.
Yeah.
But to what end? I just feel like this is true of every genre. This is true of every genre.
Right. Yeah. It's like, I mean, even, you know, comedies do it too. Yeah. And TV appropriates film. Like, it's like, there's just so much.
Yeah.
franchising and repeating of ideas when there are also tons of new ideas that would be exciting to watch. So yeah. We'll see. But what a great one.
Absolutely. Allison, what are some fatal mistakes you think may have been made in Halloween 2?
Fatal mistakes.
Every single time anyone didn't run away.
Yeah.
Would be a big one for me. There was a lot of just like, why did you go back in? Why didn't you just sprint away into like the nerd, you know? So that, and just like Michael being out in the world in general and them not be like, I feel like a lot of this was avoidable.
Yeah.
From the original.
And it's hard. I don't want, listen, Dr. Loomis gave his life to stop Michael Myers and we give him credit for that.
Yes.
But
yes,
if you think this person is not human, you have to take some inhuman precautions.
Yes. It's not just like a guy. Like you have to bring in more people. And I know that it's like immediately after, there's not a lot of time.
Yes.
It's pre-internet, all that stuff. But like we need manpower. We need answers. We need more than what was provided.
Yeah, and I love it picks up immediately after. I think that's so
really
smart.
Fun.
And then you get to see people finding out about it. It puts people at a disadvantage in a way that is really satisfying. We're in on it in a way that's really enjoyable.
Yes.
Oh yeah, I was trying to remember, like, why were they moving him again? Michael had a court hearing. So I suppose the court system, that's good. He should have a court hearing. He should be able to plead his case. Unfortunately, in this situation, he is not human.
Yeah. So like, what's the system?
So it's tough. You know, it's really tough.
Yeah.
But in real life, that is good. And they should do that.
Yes, absolutely.
Other than that, again, Lori certainly did her best. I feel like people, they just didn't have enough information. And even if they had.
What do you do?
What do you do? If he's unstoppable, if you can't shoot him.
Right. Then like, I don't really know what the answer is.
And I feel like that to me, it really works with this movie, I think, but there are certain movies where you find out that there was nothing they could do. Then to me, it undermines the scariness of it. It's like, so if this is just inevitable, then when
it was just going
to wheel of trying to see like, how are they going to get out of it? You know, how are they going to escape? Yeah. I want the tension of survival, most of all, you know? Yeah. But a phenomenal film, and great way to kick off sequels month.
Sequels month.
Allison, where would you put this on the spooky scale?
A spooky scale.
I think this is a 7. Like, the Halloween movies are scary. The boiling, drowning is scary. His face is scary. Him with the fire. Like, it's a scary movie. 7.
I agree. Wait, what are you giving it? Sorry.
7.
7.
What about you?
I'm going to give it 7, too. It packs a punch, even knowing there are sequels, even knowing where the franchise ends up going.
Right.
It is good. And if I had seen this when I was younger, and if I had seen it in theaters,
boy.
It's a popcorn movie. I want to be choking on that popcorn.
Yeah.
An excellent one.
A great one.
Yeah.
And guys, if this is the first episode of the new year, we have a Patreon. It is out there. It is a great thing for both original. I mean, not a lot of the originals are not in the Patreon. They're a regular feed, but there's plenty of great movies in our Patreon that you can go either listen to or watch, depending on what you would like to pay for. And, you know, live show tickets are included at certain tiers. And it's just, I mean, maybe your resolution should be listen to more of us, in which case we have a solution and it's joining our Patreon. So that's out there. Please go subscribe if you would like.
In the meantime,
please
keep it spooky.
Don't forget to follow us at Ruin Podcast and Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok for show updates. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review. Ruined is a Radio Point and Crooked Media production. We're your writers and hosts, Hallie Kiefer and Allison Leiby. The show is executive produced by Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder, and recorded and edited by Kat Iosa. From Crooked Media, our executive producer is Kendra James, with production and promotional support from Ari Schwartz, Kyle Sieglin, Julia Beach, Caroline Dunphy, and Awa Okolade.